Britských listů, vážení televizní diváci, vysíláme z Bostonu ve Spojených státech, kde jsem na slavistické konferenci. Shodou okolností máme před kamerou dneska, a to je šilná protekce, ale vážně ne, mou dceru Hanu Čulík-Bédovou, která na Bostonské univerzitě vyučuje latinu. A přestože je to moje dcera, tak jsem jí pozval do tohoto rozhovoru Britských listů proto, protože mě nesmírně zaujalo, jakým v atraktivním způsobem ona tu latinu na té Bostonské univerzitě s přihlédnutím k současné politice učí. Rozhovor pro jistotu povedeme v angličtině, takže se omlouváme za ty anglické titulky, které začnou od teďka. Hanna, you studied Latin and Ancient Greek at Oxford University, mm-hmm. then you did a doctoral thesis at the University of Southern California about Cicero, mm-hmm. and you ended up as an assistant professor in Latin at Boston University in the United States, where this is now the second year that you're teaching this. What are you doing there, actually?
Well, I'm teaching a lot of classes to undergraduates. I teach Latin. I teach a course called Women in Antiquity, where we start with women from Homer down into the Roman period, so basically almost 1,000 years of culture where we look at the voices of women. Mm-hmm. And I teach Roman civilization, and I also teach classes about my interest in fragments, fragmentation, how and why the sources from the ancient world don't come down to us and what we can try to do to recover them.
This is very interesting. One particularly fascinating point for me is that you, although a Latinist, you're actually using very much social networks, which are normally foul-mouthed or criticized, mm-hmm. but you're using Twitter yeah. for disseminating your knowledge about the ancient world of Greece and Rome, and you have thousands of followers. Why are you doing this?
Well, the internet is already where we keep all of our information. The first things that a student will do when they're trying to find some information out is to Google it. And as we know, Google is not research, but it is a way to find information. And Twitter is a network of people who are interested in the ancient world, but also experts. And this combination of discussion where experts can talk about their research but also about their teaching, and students can see this and participate in it and also create knowledge themselves, is one of the things that I find particularly good and interesting. And it opens up a world that was very kind of arcane and only allowed to the very highest educated people, is now open for many different kinds of participants.
What's the reaction? Because I know that you did a class or lecture at your university for secondary school students, and you put some stuff from it on Twitter, and it was seen within 24 hours by 12,000 people. Is this a normal reaction, or how do people generally react?
It's not normally as high as that for me, but we have a number of it's not just me, other professors regularly tweet, and so they have between 20 and more thousands of followers, because they're presenting the information in an accessible way, and there's a real hunger for this kind of material out there, and also they're disseminating the information and discussing the information in a socially conscious way. So it is not simply, here is the ancient material, you should emulate it, you should love it, but rather, here is ancient material, and actually there is a lot of problems with the way the ancient cultures work, and we can actually study this and interrogate it, and interrogate our own assumptions about antiquity and modernity.
We are getting to the very important point. However, I would first have to say now, unlike sort of me, who's specializing in Czech studies, that's a totally exotic subject for the Western world, but of course Latin. Some people might think some people might think that this is an exotic subject as well, but it is actually at the a kind of fundament of Western or European civilization, so that people actually can relate to it much better, don't they? Isn't
well,
it?
Well, I mean, the first thing we have to say about this notion of Western civilization is that historically, classics, the study of Latin and Greek, has made the claim that study the ancient world and the Roman world, the Greek world, and you'll understand Western civilization, you'll understand our roots. The trouble with this now is that There are people who politicize this and want to say that this is the culture that we should be doing to the exclusion of other types of culture that that were contemporary with the ancient world. So, for example, our narrow view on the Mediterranean, Italy and Greece, excludes other narratives that were very important to the creation of those cultures, such as especially Near Eastern influence upon... Without the Near Eastern influence, you would not have Homer, you would not have Sappho. And so I want people to be very careful about invoking the Western civilization as a reason to study the ancient material. Now, what you can say is that because individuals have always... in the West, have always claimed the ancient world in order to perform their own education. That means, as a result, that elite aristocrats who are creating the books that we read, even into the Enlightenment, are very, very interested in the ancient world. And so, as a result, for example, Cicero, the author, the Roman author that I study, and basically it can be found everywhere in all of these texts that you might read, regardless of what time period you're interested in. So the classics never went away. It's just that we now are seeing different ways of managing it.
Okay, you actually I understand are looking very critically at the sort of heritage of ancient Greece and Rome, and you are finding. What was basically the motivation for recording this interview, founding some very, very interesting topical parallels with today's world. Can you actually talk a little bit about this? What are you doing in this respect?
Well, again, not just me, but as a field, we're now interested in seeing... because now we're not so interested in simply reviving the ancients as an example for us to become ourselves. We're interested in studying the culture. So, for example, last year, Emily Wilson, whose new translation came out of the Odyssey, which is the first time the Odyssey has been translated into English by a woman. And her translation, because it was interested in kind of looking at it afresh... and not kind of reading into certain behaviors the values that of our own society, although that even
so it avoids stereotypes.
Well, so basically, Professor Wilson will not go towards this over sexualized stereotypes that happens to some of the female characters in this.
Could you give us some examples?
Yes. So the women who are in Odysseus' household are accused of being sluts and whores for sleeping with the suitors. And in a very violent conclusion to this poem, Odysseus hangs the women who sleep with the suitors. And but the language is not necessarily sexualized in the way that many translators had previously made it, because they assumed that the sexual fault was actually a good reason for them to be hanged.
So this is interesting. So in the original, this isn't present. Yeah. And the translators over the centuries have put it in there because they felt in their societies this was appropriate.
Right. So they read their own... They couldn't go look past necessarily their own assumptions about how men and women should behave together. And they saw certain Greek words and they translated it certain ways. A really famous and clear case also is the word for the slave in the Odyssey... Demoe, which is has been historically translated as handmaiden, where really it means someone who's a slave and therefore
regardless
an
of
object.
Gender. Okay.
Uh-huh. No, and specifically in this case, it's the women that we're interested in. So when you but maid in a 19th century context just seems like someone who cleans up after you. Certainly from a different social class than the person that they're working for, but very radically different from the social constructs. These are cultures that had slaves, and we need to nothing from the ancient world would have been possible without slaves. The Greeks and the Romans, and so it's something that we want to pay attention to. Is that the social history of these texts are maybe being elided if we don't pay attention to what the words, quote-unquote, really mean.
You were telling me that in Athens democracy was created, we tend to forget that women, foreigners, and slaves were excluded.
Yes.
And that's very much like today.
Yes. So when people claim that Athens is the kind of forebear for our own democracy, they're right, but we don't want to be right in this way, in the sense that the democracy that we're aiming for here is more inclusive than what the Athenians very conservatively thought. For the Athenians, who we claim as the kind of golden age sometimes, is for them it was about exclusion of people who are not male Athenian citizens.
You also told me about a poem where the author gloated over a rape of a woman. Do you do this in class?
Do I gloat? No.
No, but okay.
Well, this is a thing that, again, in the Me Too era, we are now becoming much more sensitive to the fact that the majority of our texts from the ancient world depict violence towards women.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, there are a number of texts that do this, but Ovid, for example, a Roman poet who writes love poetry, talks a lot about rape. And in this world where we are realizing how bad a problem of rape that we have in our own culture, we're not being so cavalier about how we talk about these issues in the ancient context.
So how do you deal with it in class?
Well, we have to say, to preface it by saying this is possibly going to be very upsetting, but we make it clear that this is not a handbook, we're not teaching this as a behaviour, but rather we're studying what this tells us about the culture that produced it.
And it's a warning for the present?
It's a way for us to work through the cultural trends that create these kinds of power structures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so you're teaching this course, women in ancient Rome or whatever it is, yes, exactly?
Yeah, in antiquity, so
antiquity,
it's
yeah. And how do your students react to this?
Well, I was wanting to be really careful about the class not just being every week we turn up and we hear more and more about the abuse of women over time, because that can be demoralizing. But so I've set up the class for it to be an exploration of what are the processes that stop certain voices from being heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, in fact, you're getting into one of the key mechanisms in classics as a field, is that this is something that we're always studying, is why is it that this text has survived and this one hasn't? What do these fragments come from? How are they created? So we're really interested in the figure of Sappho, who is a Greek lyric poet who tells us about the experiences of women in the archaic period. And then we look at how Sappho appears throughout the rest of Greco-Roman antiquity, because she becomes such a huge symbol.
Mm.
And so the students are really understanding now that when you look critically at these sources, you cannot assume anything. You must, if you want to make any kind of claim, you have to have the evidence right there. You have to point to it. And sometimes you have to really have a strong interpretive frame to get at it. So they have found it kind of a revelation, because they have come across some of these figures from the female figures from history before, such as Cleopatra, one of the figures that we study. And they have heard all of these kind of myths and legends about them. And now they have the tools to unpack it and figure out how these stories occurred.
The question of interpretation is really a kind of worms, isn't it? Because, I mean, we can't step into the shoes of the people who lived 2,000 years ago in ancient Rome. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know how they thought. And we're looking at everything through the prism of today. Is that wrong?
We need to understand that is what's happening with everything. It's an epistemological problem that we.
So basically, whatever we study about the past is really the study of our present.
Indeed, and so that is why, as classics now has different types of people, or like women, people of color, people from lots of different backgrounds. When different types of people study the ancient material, you see different things.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're interested in different kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why we want to open up classics to be studied by lots of different types of people. But honestly, everything we study, modern or ancient, we are in the way. We make the problem because we're interested in specific issues. So we colour the material always by our interest.
This is very interesting. So basically what you're saying, the original material is multi-layered, and it resonates with different things, but unfortunately there was a hegemony over the past centuries, whatever, that only one type of person was picking up one type of thing, and now there's a possibility, maybe, of actually opening it up so that we can see also other interpretations.
Yeah, exactly. So it is not the case that we are being anachronistic and reading new things into old when we look for different approaches. Those different things were always there, they were always latent, but we hadn't been looking for them because we hadn't developed those questions yet. We hadn't freed up our research questions. We hadn't seen it in the context of theories of gender or sexuality or politics or social history, certain things that are now being developed that are really responses to our own political time, but can reveal the material that was already there. I'm always responding to what my students, what their interests are. The way the American system works is that mostly I'm not teaching classicists, I'm teaching students from all types of places in the university.
This is very good because they get information about it, yes.
They get the liberal arts education, and their interest guides my interest and kind of makes it possible for me to talk about quite a complex material in a way which is more accessible.
Thank you very much, very interesting. Vážení televizní diváci, děkujeme za pozornost. Naschledanou.